came across the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, and also another writing of his called the Emerald Tablet, singular, of Hermes. And between reading these two ancient works, I realized there was a lot of esoteric knowledge and wisdom in here that other scholars had discovered, even like Sir Isaac Newton and Roger Bacon and the Queen of Sheba, St. Thomas Aquinas. Many famous people had come across this, but they only focused on the esoteric wisdom, which is what really grabbed me at first. But then I started noticing things like advanced technology, ships that fly in not only above land, but also into space where planets disappear according to their descriptions. I started noticing weaponry, and I started noticing different types of quantum mechanics and quantum physics that George Lucas literally had access to these tablets and these ancient writings. And he took that storyline and turned it into a movie. Because if you read the Terra papers, you get the almost the identical story of Star Wars, with the exception of some of the love story and some of the drama, you know, that was in Hollywood, fusion. But you get the basic story, and you have all of these. You have the Empire, and you have, you know, the Republic, and you have this galactic war going on with all these different beings. And even the Terra papers tell you how all these beings even came to be, different types of humanoids around the entire galaxy.
I'm proud to share with you Tetragen, which helps you transition to a healthier, happier, and thinner you without cravings or side effects. Our metabolic hormones are the underlying problem that doom every diet and exercise program to fail. They control our metabolism, cravings, how much we eat to feel satiated, blood sugar levels, and even our energy levels. Tetragen is formulated with four clinically proven patented ingredients that help rebalance your metabolic hormones in roughly 15 to 20 days, depending on the amount of weight you want to lose. Once your metabolic hormones are rebalanced, you'll be on the path to long-term, sustainable weight loss because Tetragen is the first in the world which is scientifically formulated with four clinically proven and patented active ingredients to help you reach your targeted weight in two distinct phases. Phase one, rebalance your metabolic hormones, and phase two, accelerate fat loss. The best part is that Tetragen comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. So what do you have to lose besides weight? Learn more with the link below.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have a really incredibly interesting person coming to the program. His name is Billy Carson. I think he is going to be famous. I mean, he's already famous, but he's going to be really famous if he sticks to his what he's doing. He is so interesting, and we are blessed to be able to have him come to the show and just talk about what he's learning about ancient texts. He has a book called The Compendium of the Emerald Tablets, and he says he's read those 180 times, and he keeps reading them. He's just learning and learning until he understands them completely. I don't know if you can ever understand something completely, but he really wants to. In the book he has, and he explains it, where he's really explaining what is in these tablets. And these, he talks about these ancient, you know, the ancient Sumerian tablets, and he talks about these papers and the Star Wars saga. I mean, just, it is absolutely fascinating. And people who've seen the Mario Bigolino interviews that I've done, where he's the Vatican translator and he's translated a lot of books for the Vatican, it really ties into that. And he ties it across all of different civilizations through history and how they had high technology 450,000 years ago and how it's all documented and how that ties into the Bible. And so for people who are really strong followers of the Bible, I'm just saying, please give it time and an open mind to at least hear what he has to say. This is not meant to be. He talks about Jesus being this loving, beautiful character, and how that ties back. So, it really supports the messages of Jesus being beautiful and how that's so helpful, and science proving that love is the strongest force in the universe, and how that all ties back together. Absolutely fascinating. One thing that I find as really great, and I'm going to share this with my kids, is he's doing music that can resonate with kids, and it's made the top, the Billboard top charts in like four different categories, and he's doing it at a different frequency so kids can learn. It's all positive rap music and things. You got to listen to him. It's fascinating. And then he stays after for my patrons to talk about the bloodlines of every single president in our country and where it came from. That's for my patrons, and you can get that below at the link. And I also want to tell you that I have a lot more stuff on my shop, which helps this independent journalist here stay going. And I have things that are great for Christmas, things that are under $50 that can make good Christmas presents. I have free offers also on my website. I have a free ebook that you can get. And I have this free little pearl blade thing, stiletto blade, that you have to pay for shipping. It's $5.95 for shipping, but you get the blade for free. And as I find more interesting things like that, I'll put it on. But there's also really great gift ideas, and it helps us independent journalists. And so does Patreon. And thank you so much for being my patrons. I want to give you more value than what you're paying. And so for those of you, there are discount codes that are available for my patrons. You can get those. Now I have a section. So if you're a patron, you can see all the ebooks and you can see the discount codes I do have up there right now. Of course, there's a lot of interviews that are exclusive. I don't have sections yet for that, but the ebooks and the discounts I do. So get that link below to my shop and to become a patron. And I want to let you know that this is a two-part interview. Hopefully you'll get the opportunity to watch both parts. It's super fascinating. So let's get to my interview with Billy Carson. Billy, thank you so much for joining the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I'm so excited about the opportunity to come on your network and talk to the people out there and let them hear what I have to say.
Well, I watched the show, and I had multiple listeners send me a link of your show, and I watched, and it had to be one of the most interesting things I've seen in a while. And I was, you know, with all the, I deal with difficult subjects, and I deal with the edge of change and what's going on, and I was like, oh, it's a show I needed to see. It was just so cool and refreshing, and I learned stuff from it. But you have, and so I want to get into that in the topics that you cover. Mm-hmm. You have a book called The Continuum of the Emerald Tablets. Can you explain what the book is about and how it has grabbed so many people?
Yeah. Well, the book is The Compendium of the Emerald Tablets. And what I did was, I would say probably about now 7 years ago, I came across the Emerald Tablets of Thoth and also another writing of his called The Emerald Tablet, singular, of Hermes. And between reading these two ancient works, I realized there was a lot of esoteric knowledge and wisdom in here that other scholars had discovered, even like Sir Isaac Newton and Roger Bacon and the Queen of Sheba, St. Thomas Aquinas. Many famous people had come across this, but they only focused on the esoteric wisdom, which is what really grabbed me at first. But then I started noticing things like advanced technology, ships that fly in not only above land, but also into space where planets disappear according to their descriptions. I started noticing weaponry and I started noticing different types of quantum mechanics and quantum physics. And I said, wow, this is amazing. So I started talking to people about the Emerald Tablets, and they were more, directed towards or gravitating towards the esoteric information and still weren't really understanding all of it. But then when I started telling them about what I started discovering in there and breaking it down, they started going, wow. And that's when I realized, you know what, I should do a book about this. So that's what a compendium is. A compendium is when you take a massive amount of information and you break it down in a way where the average person can understand it. What I've done is I've taken the Emerald Tablets and I stop you as you're reading and I break it down so that you don't have to go too far to realize what you just read. I stop you and then I go, okay, this is exactly what's happening here. And then we proceed on. So you're reading the tablets and getting a complete commentary on it at the same time. And I even show pictures and I correlate science to science, great science articles on physics.org and peer-reviewed papers, comparing it with the actual writings in the tablets. And then I even break down religious texts and where they got a lot of their information from. For example, even in the modern day Bible, where Yeshua is speaking in the New Testament is all identically copied from the Emerald Tablets of Thoth written 36,000 years ago.
Yeah, that is just so incredible. And one of the things there's a lot of things that you said that was incredible that I wanted you to dive into a little bit more. But I think this will be interesting for people. The Star Wars saga was really based on these papers and tablets that you found. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's really amazing. The more that I dug into the Sumerian tablets, the Mahabharata, the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, the Indian Vedas, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Egyptian Book of Going Forth by Day, I began to realize, and the Tara papers, which is really the majority of the information, that George Lucas literally had access to these tablets and these ancient writings, and he took that storyline and turned it into a movie. Because if you read the Tara papers, you get the almost the identical story of Star Wars, with the exception of some of the love story and some of the drama, you know, that was in Hollywood, fusion. But you get the basic story, and you have all of these. You have the Empire, and you have, you know, the Republic, and you have this galactic war going on with all these different beings. And even the Tara papers tells you how all these beings even came to be, different types of humanoids around the entire galaxy. So it's really an amazing piece of work, but it reads just like, and it's thousands of years old. But so what's happened is, you know, George Lucas, you know, obviously he read this. I mean, it's very clear. And he turned it into a movie. I mean, hats off to him. I mean, nobody else knew it existed, and very few people did, except for the indigenous Native Americans. So that's who kept the history of this record of this Tara papers. And he turned it into a multi-billion dollar movie.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's that interesting. And now you found these papers, and you rediscovered them just like he did. Now, everybody can do that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like it's magic and it's not made up. They can look at these papers themselves. Yeah. Where did you get access to this?
The Tara papers have been brought forward by a lot of indigenous Native American elders. One in particular, Robert Morningsky, who's been lecturing about them for decades now. He doesn't lecture as much anymore because he's a lot older now. But, you know, 15, 20 years ago, he was on a lecture route, and he was talking about the Tara papers quite often. There have been now copies of the Tara papers put online. You can just Google Tara papers, T-E-R-R-A papers, and you can then check out a copy of the Tara papers, which are, you can just read them like you're reading a book now. And also on YouTube, there's quite a few YouTube channels that have now published the Tara papers, and they read them for you. So it's almost like an audio book. So you can listen to it now as well. You don't have to worry about just reading it. So they're real documents. They're real ancient records kept by the ancient Native Indigenous Americans, the original people here on this land. And it's real. You know, it's really amazing. It's an amazing epic, because what I like about it, it talks about the formation of hominids around the entire galaxy. And all these sentient hominids that develop the ability to travel into space all have something similar. We all usually have forward-facing eyes. We're bilateral and bipedal organisms. In other words, we can stand up, and you can cut us in half, and you get two equal sides. So it's just really amazing. It talks about reptilian, insectoid, what we look like, Homo sapiens style, just various different hominids around the galaxy, and how they've risen to become spacefaring races, but then also, again, began to go to war against each other. Yeah.
Well, and you talk about it starting 450,000 years ago, which is just incredible. Mm-hmm. Now, where did you get that information, and what did you learn about that?
Yeah. Well, Matt, you're referencing the Sumerian tablets, which keep a very incredible record of the invasion, so to speak, of the Anunnaki to this planet. They came here about 450,000 years ago. This is according to the Enuma Elish and the Seven Tablets of Creation, and also in the Atra-Asis epic. Both are ancient Sumerian stone tablets written in cuneiform writing that date back tens of thousands of years, and they were recopied. The more recent ones are estimating to be around 6,000 to 8,000 years old. Zachariah Sitchin wrote books about these tablets. He didn't decipher any of these tablets. He just copied what was already deciphered long before he was even born. So he didn't even have to decipher them. They were already deciphered by many scholars, and he just wrote books about what he already had found. But in there, there's a record and account of not only them coming here, but even prior to them coming here. It talks about the formation of our actual solar system. And it talks about how there was a collision with a captured planet that orbited a brown dwarf star that crashed into a planet named Tiamat, which is now the asteroid belt. But a huge chunk of Tiamat swept away and gravitationally locked into the orbit that we are now, recoalesced with all of its water and organic material, and that's where the Earth came from. The Earth wasn't here at the time. And then it even talks about we gravitationally pulled the one of the moons of this Tiamat with us as this big chunk swung away. The rest of it became the asteroid belt. And Mars, which was also a moon of this Tiamat, swung out and was released into its own very strange orbit. That's why Mars is a very, very weird orbit around the sun. At its furthest point, it's about 180 million miles away, and at its closest, it's only like 40 million miles away. So every 2 years, it reaches this very oblong orbit where it's very good timing to do a mission to go to Mars every 2 years because it's very close. You can get there in 3 months now versus, you know, years. So it's a very interesting story, but it's all etched into stone. The Enuma Elish and the Seven Tablets of Creation make most of the Old Testament of the modern day Bible. That's where the full stories come from, including separating the waters from the waters and the formation of the earth is really a allegory that's described in the Enuma Elish in the way that the earth was a big chunk that was swung away from this other massive planet. We gravitationally took the moon with it. Also part of the Old Testament is the Atra-Asis epic and also some of the Mahabharata. They really just piecemealed a lot of information from various different sources. And of course, the Emerald Tablets, because the Emerald Tablets, the opening verse talks about the Great Flood. And the key thing about this is Thoth says that my mission is to go raise mankind back to a level, high level of civilization. So that means prior to the flood, just as we already know by looking at the Sumerian Kings List, which is the antediluvial Kings List, Earth had already had high levels of civilization on it prior to the flood. And so Thoth starts off with the Emerald Tablets as the flood now waters are receding, and he's going back to bring mankind back to a higher level of civilization around the entire planet. He starts off in the land of Khem, which is known as ancient Egypt first. So it's really an amazing story.
Now, in any of your findings, do we figure out what caused the flood?
That's a very interesting thing. Now, so far, I cannot find a specific cause or reason for the flood. So it's left up to kind of interpretation. Some people kind of theorize that it might have been a war that occurred that caused this flood. Some people theorize that it was done on purpose, like a captured asteroid or comet was targeted towards Earth on purpose to wipe out mankind by Enlil, who was the son of Anu and the brother of Enki. And also some people theorize it was just a natural occurring geological disaster that happened. And because of that, the Anunnaki people, they were able technologically to survive it because they were able to go into their skyship, because there's some accounts of them watching the flood go over the land from space. And they even, according to some records, they were even like sorrowful that their creation had been destroyed. So if you direct something at a place to destroy them on purpose, why would you then be sorrowful or woeful that it actually was destroyed? So I'm kind of in between. I really don't know. But, obviously it did happen. There's records of it around the entire planet. And it is spoken about in the tablets. But the specifics of how it happened are not spoken about.
Well, didn't they argue on whether they wanted to save the human race or let them peril?
Yes. Now, they knew that the flood was going to occur because of some geological disaster pending, whether they were going to trigger it or not. But there was some talk as to, should we save mankind? Should we warn them? Should we allow other people to be saved? And there was a big battle about this. Enlil, who was more of the evil one, he just wanted everybody to be wiped away and start fresh and rebuild all the kingdoms and re-genetically modify humans again and everything else. Enki, because he already had made it with humans and had some half-human, half-Anunnaki children down there, he was like, wait a minute, I got to do something about this. So Noah was actually his son. Yeah, he was a demigod. Noah was not all 100% human. And you can read in the accounts of Noah that when he was born, the family members were dark-skinned. He came out with this albino-type colored skin. And he was like, and his eyes were different and his hair was different. So he was obviously not a normal child. He decided to give Noah some secret information so that he could survive this flood and told him to build a submersible. It was actually a circular ship. It wasn't a regular boat like it was talked about in the Bible. And he also collected samples of the local herbs and plants and animals, which I believe that there was probably some type of a DNA bank.
Yeah, that's what makes more sense. Now, when they say albino, could, I mean, am, you know, if you think of brown skin, maybe I would be considered albino in the way they described it. So maybe it was just a lighter colored person.
It could have been a lighter colored person because they didn't describe as pale, just as the descriptions read a couple different ways, but it's more like bright skin, light skinned. In some cases there were blue eyes. Like some of the Anunnaki had dark skin. Some of them had light skin, and most of them had light eyes. Some of them had red hair. Some of them had blonde hair. You know, so that the, what our perception is of different races, how you see, I see you as a Caucasian, you see me as an African-American. To me, the Anunnaki were a multiracial species, and where a dark-skinned Anunnaki person probably had blue eyes and blonde hair. And we're seeing, we are experiencing it different as what we call a Homo sapiens sapien on the planet, the way that we're set up, you know, genetically. But I believe that their genetics were a little bit different than ours, and they were more mixed up. A white or a light-skinned Anunnaki person could have, you know, features of an African, but have Caucasian, you know, type skin. And this is kind of evident in a lot of the Egyptian motif. You can look at the Great Sphinx, for example. The face of the Sphinx is obviously has African features, but it's very possible that that could have been a dark-skinned person or it could have been a light-skinned person. You know, we specifically don't exactly know. There are some accounts even of these Anunnaki beings mating with people or taking on wives from, like this one account of it, from another planet. I mean, so we're talking about a complete mix. And then in the Emerald Tablets, where Thoth tells his crew members to spread around the entire planet and duplicate what they did in the land of Kim to, you know, rekindle civilization, they then go around to all these different parts of the planet. And I believe that they genetically put a marker on the Homo sapiens. In other words, this is where we got Asian, Caucasian, African, we already know they established in the land of Kim, indigenous redskin men. So I think that they put, like how you brand cattle, they genetically gave us a 2% variance, which is what it really is in biology, in race. And that was kind of like their brand. These are my people. These are my people over here. These are my people over here. And they ruled over us, and they duplicated the civilizations that they found in the land. And that's why you find pyramids and these great megalithic structures all around the planet. Because Thoth told them to go and duplicate it, but they branded the people by genetically modifying them and giving them a specific race. These, like, you know, these are my people type thing. And all those people would worship them as their god. You know, it was really interesting.
Now, is there indication that they actually, well, we talked about there being a fight about whether they should let us peril, you know, die or not. But did they care about us, or did they see us as cattle?
Some saw us as cattle, the majority saw us as cattle, and some saw us as, you know, people that they actually ended up falling in love with and caring about and having empathy for. Enki, Thoth, those two were in particular, they really loved humans, were really concerned about humans. They had, you know, had human wives and everything else, had babies from humans and so forth. So they were really, you know, had a lot of empathy for mankind and wanted to help and help mankind reach another level. Enki's brother Enlil got very mad at Enki because Enki added a little bit of extra when he did the genetic modification. Enlil found out about this later and discovered that mankind is not just an animal the way that Enki had explained he was going to create us to be, just this slave working animal, that he really gave us an extra piece of essence in us genetically that can allow us to even supersede the Anunnaki themselves. And when Enlil found out about this, he became really enraged about it.
Now, that's all documented in the tablets?
Yeah. This is in the Sumerian tablets.
Okay. So yeah. What did they give us that made us bad or capable of bypassing them?
Well, it's the they call it the essence. And so to me, that means some type of genetic DNA or some type of chromosome, whatever they did when they genetically did the modification. You know, what they did initially was they took, to get the Homo sapiens sapien, they took an egg, they cleaned out some of the genetic material, added some of the Anunnaki genetic material, and then, which is in modern science we call a zygote, they embedded it into the womb of an Anunnaki female who then took it to full term. She actually went 10 full months, then gave birth to what she called the Adamu, which means first man. and is a famous Cylinder Scholar for holding the baby up, saying, "My hands have created it." So now, whatever they did with this essence that they claimed that they add, he added a little extra. Maybe it's the ability for the evolution of DNA to map out a certain way. We have found out now that human DNA, 733 petabytes of data, which is an enormous amount of data, and a human body can store literally googles of data. And so I'm thinking it has to do with the way that our DNA had been modified to be a storage medium, and that we can literally store all the information contained in the entire universe in our body. And I think that's one of the biggest things that they were talking about, and also our ability to reconnect and reprogram our own DNA, which has now been scientifically proven. You can do a simple task just as saying 3 positive affirmations per day for 21 days, and you can reprogram DNA just from doing that. So these different things that they gave us, and the ability to recognize self, be conscious of self, really took away from Enlil's idea of this slave race, of being just a bunch of cattle out there doing our work, to people that are sentient, intelligent beings that can elevate, achieve higher levels of consciousness, and potentially, and because we outnumber them, overthrow them.
Which is what we want to do now. Now, are they still running our planet? I mean, is there indications based on everything you read that they're still around controlling us now?
I believe so. I believe 1,000% that they're still around controlling this planet. There's a base in Antarctica, which is clear to see. Vessels fly in and out of this 35-meter opening. And when you go to Google Earth and look down on it, you see it's a no-war zone. It's a peace zone. So there you have all of these individual research centers there, and they all have the name of the country that they're from, and it's labeled on Google Earth. And one of the main ones there, of course, is the Rockefeller Foundation. And why that's important is because they've got their hands in everything. And when you look into this ancient pyramid war that happened with Amun-Ra, because he was trying to, who's also known as Marduk in the modern day Bible and also in the Torah. So his name is in modern text as well. He's also in the JewishAmericanLibrary.org and all that. But he tried to take over his kingship of the planet early. You're supposed to wait till your procession hits before you can say, okay, now I'm going to take over my rulership of the planet. He jump-started that and started a war so he can take over early. He wanted to take over Pisces early. It kick-started another war, which he had already started one in the beginning, and he started one towards the beginning of the reign. And he then escaped through, he hid inside the Great Pyramid and escaped through a hatch by one of his employees, or one of his workers helped him escape. But before he did that, he made a decree, and he ordered that the wealth of the kingdom and the wealth and finances of the planet be left over to the Ra-Kam. So the Ra-Kam, the word K-A-M, translates into shield. So the Ra-Shield had taken over, or was decreed that they would take over the riches and finances of the kingdom. This is, 6,000 years ago. And when you look at the Ra-Shield, who controls the planet till this day? The Ra-Shields. The Rothschilds and the Rockefellers together. There are some additional texts in that decree that allude to the Rockefeller, and you have to go through a translation to get it exactly right. But it's amazing that there's a correlation between those names that long ago. And, those Rockefellers and Rothschilds have been quoted as saying that they feel that they've been given the right to rule over mankind. And they're just going over ancient texts that they already know about exist in their bloodline. How can they be white if people have been black? I mean, everybody's
mixed. Their bloodline is so diluted that they're not any different than any of us anymore, I would think. They just think they are. Or unless they've been injected with more Anunnaki DNA somehow. But other than that, they're just like us.
The bloodline goes back to it can be traced back to the pharaohs and then back to the Sumerian kings list and also to the Arabian kings. So when Egypt had been overthrown so many times, this is what a lot of people don't understand. Like, how come, the big thing is always Egypt was all black. It was all black. It was the land of Cam means the land of the black people. And it was black. Those people were the Dogon tribe that actually migrated out of Africa into Mali, Africa, out of Egypt. I'm sorry, into Mali, Africa. And then but other races had taken over Egypt because Egypt was so nice and believe it or not, and no army. They were all about arts and all these kind of things. And they didn't focus on wars. For 1,000 years, there were no wars. But then when the Assyrians and the Persians and the Arabians, they all were like, we're going to go take this place over. and even the Greeks. And so many times, seven times, they have been taken over by different races of people. And of course, mating and breeding and everything else. And so you start off one race and you end up a totally different one at the end. And then when the pharaohs, after Alexander the Great was the last one to defeat, they started migrating, the families of these pharaohs started migrating across into Europe. But along the way, mating and taking a very long time to get there, by the time they got to England, that line was mostly Caucasian people. And this is why you see a lot of the Egyptian motif around the monarchy, because it all goes back to ancient history. And they know this. They know the whole, you know, but again, there's so much mating going on. They're just regular people, just like anybody else. They put their pants on one leg at a time. You know, and they're going off. And now what they do have above us is they understand these ancient Egyptian mysteries that have been handed down from generation to generation, and how to cast spells on people, how to cast spells on space-time, how to cast spells to get the agenda that they want to move forward, and how to program people through all the different businesses they own. They understand frequencies, and they understand technology, and they understand cymatic vibrations. They understand words and how to say words in a specific way to cast spells. And they've been experts at it. And the evidence is that 13 families run over, you know, they control 7.5 billion people.
Well, and spells, let's demystify it. Spells is technology that we might not understand, but they know how the words, because sound is frequency. They know how it affects mm-hmm. us. They know how to, they're so good at psychology and mm-hmm. how these words repeated a certain amount of times with certain music yep. and everything else affects us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it is. It's really all technology and understanding spirituality, linking with quantum mechanics. And when you understand those two really go together, then you understand how different frequencies, different vibrations, for example, they pretty much don't play anything on the radio except for 440 hertz. That's damaging to human DNA. They know this. They're the ones who actually installed that, instilled it, and put it out there that way. The way that programming is on TV and subliminal messages that occur during different programs and things like that, the way that words are said, like you said, and also the actual cymatic frequencies of the vocalization of specific words in specific ways will actually directly affect the water molecules in your body and cause different things to happen in your life. And they also understand that space-time itself is changeable and warpable. If you can actually create a ripple in space-time that will alter a future reality, and they understand this as well. So everything that they do is planned out by millennia. We're planning for what's gonna happen this weekend. Like, the weekend is coming in a couple days. People are planning for the weekend. They're planning for millennia. Their plans are so large that it escapes the perception of the average person.
Yeah. And so understanding this now, I was so impressed when you said that when you were trying to understand these, that you read it like 50 times. And mm-hmm. so that you could just really understand what it is that you were reading. And so when you're in your book, you really help people understand it because you spent so much time breaking it down yourself.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time breaking it down. I'm up to 180 reads of the Emerald Tablets of Thoth now. And I'm still planning on reading it more and more and more. I've got so much more now out of it, believe it or not, even after writing the book, because writing the book took me to another level. Because while I'm writing the book, it's almost like you're researching and learning at the same time, and you're starting to make more correlations. And so now I'm coming out with a special limited edition by the summer, which is going to be a 500-numbered hardcover edition with a 16th chapter added to it. Which is going to do another, like a final culmination of everything new. And it's going to be amazing. That's going to be a very limited edition. It's going to be kind of expensive, but it'll be a very limited autographed personalized edition that I'm going to do probably by the summer of 2020. But there's just so much in there. And the more you read it, the more your mind just expands if you let it. And it's really an amazing read. And it's amazing. And what makes me realize this is ancient material is because it's too far advanced for our modern era, and it syncs up with ancient texts from around the world, like the Mahabharata and all these other texts that are talking about these flying vehicles, these galactic wars and all this stuff. It's really syncing with that information and not syncing with anything in what we have right now.